Hello, and welcome to the Aquarian Spirals podcast. Musings on astrology, cosmology, practical woo, non-monogamy, and just general witchiness. Your guide to love-soaked revolution and paradigm shift. So before we roll into that, just a couple of announcements from me. My next thing coming up is going to be an astro circle. So I do monthly astro circles, have been since 2014. They're all online right now. On Thursday, February 23rd, I'll be talking about Saturn in Pisces. And on Tuesday, March 21st, I'll be talking about Pluto in Aquarius. Big topics, hot topics. Astro circles are only available for people who are subscribed to my Patreon. You can subscribe for as low as $5 a month and get access to the live circle and lots of other things. So you can always just like join and then attend the circle and then cancel, or join at $20 a month and you can attend live or get the recording. So I'll let you check that out. But it's a pretty cool way to learn astrology. I try to teach for all levels, and there's definitely a community of folks who attend on the regular, so it's also about community building. I have a couple new offerings for astrology, so you're always welcome to book an initial consult with me or an ongoing consult if you're a recurring client. But I just started doing relationship readings again, and so that is using synastry and composite charts and natal charts to look at the dynamics between two people in any kind of relationship. I also temporarily have something called a relationship reset appointment up. And that is going to be an opportunity for you to bring an open-ended question, probably about relationship stuff. And we'll look at the tarot to see what tarot has to say. And then we'll do probably 15 to 20 minute guided visualization and energy reset. So I will be helping you to do some energy work on yourself based on what's going on in your life. And those are just going to be available for the next couple days. Last I looked, there was two left. But if that's something that you're interested in, either the relationship reading or a relationship reset, you can use coupon code Venus to get 15% off. And you can use that same coupon code to get 15% off a somatic exploration session, which is these really fantastic sessions that I'm just in love with. What comes up in each one is very different, but it's a way of working with your multidimensional experience using your body as a starting point. So you can come with an intention, you can come to just explore, but we start with a body scan. And then for some people, it ends up being, you know, pretty heavy duty energy healing. For other people, it ends up being ancestral work. For other people, it ends up being very psychological. Occasionally there's some past life integration work that comes into the mix. So it's kind of a choose your own adventure, but you can use that coupon code to get 15% off of those. And that coupon code is good through February 24th. I just extended it a bit because I didn't get this podcast recorded as soon as I wanted to. Other than that, I'm going to be speaking at OPA's Time for Technique conference in April. Details on my website. I will be speaking at NORWAC in May, talking about the moon and Uranus and ancestral healing. And lastly, I have put my 2023 lecture and workshop for sale on my website under store. It's like an hour and 45 minutes of lecture about the year ahead. And then there is a 40-minute guided visualization and intention setting ritual that's pretty kick-ass. So you can check that out as well. So let me just riff a little bit on this Pisces new moon to kind of set the stage for talking about dream tending as like a technique to help with it. So the Pisces new moon is exact on Sunday the 19th at 11:05 p.m. Pacific time. It's taking place in the first degree of Pisces, still in a little bit of a conjunction with Saturn, although it's an out of sign conjunction. But Pisces being the end of the astrological year is a sign that is about culmination at the same time as it is about releasing, surrendering, and letting go so that the next new major cycle can begin. In seasonal terms, it is the end of winter, right? The year is broken up into quarters, and so it is the last month of the quarter that started with Capricorn and the winter solstice. And so Pisces has this liminality to it. It is a time when, the veil is thin, as we would say. And, I keep thinking of, I think I've seen a painting somewhere of this like woman who is underneath the ground, and you can see like a spark of light in her chest, and she's yawning and stretching, but still kind of in that incubator of winter. And so it's right before, the seeds burst above the ground and spring starts. And so Pisces is very tied into the dream realms. It is also very much about releasing. And I think that, releasing is a good thing to keep in mind, because this lunar cycle, so February 19th to March 21st, which is when the next new moon is a very potent time for releasing things that need to go in preparation for this like mega whammy new moon we have going on March 21st. And so March 21st, we have a new moon in 0 degrees of Aries. And so, this is coinciding with the spring equinox. Well, it's spring in the Northern Hemisphere. And the Aries point, so 0 degrees Aries, is a very, very potent part of the zodiac. It is a very initiatory part. Oftentimes when planets are aligning with each other around the Aries point, so usually in hard aspect to it, oppositions, conjunctions, squares, there is something new that's being initiated. And so we already have initiatory themes going on by virtue of it being spring. Okay, so the equinoxes and the solstices initiate a new season. So we're initiating spring. And, Aries is kind of like the epitome of initiation. And so we have that going on. The sun and the moon coming together the same time as the equinox doesn't happen every year. Sometimes the Aries new moon happens like 3 weeks into Aries season. So that's really cool. We also have Mercury in Aries conjunct this lunation. We also have Chiron in Aries and Jupiter in Aries. So we have like a whole Aries pile up. Just saying like, hey, time for fresh starts. There's a lot of go, go, go energy. And there are no planets retrograde at that point in time. Furthermore, we have Mars leaving its post-retrograde shadow period. So, March 25th, just a couple days after the new moon, Mars will finally be leaving that shadow. And so it will finally be covering new ground again. And Mars hasn't covered new ground since September, because, we had the pre-retrograde shadow, and then we had the whole retrograde period, and then we've been in the post-retrograde shadow since January 12th. So again, we get this kind of like new go energy. At this time, we won't have any planets retrograde. Everything will be moving forward. And then we have two other things to keep in mind. One is that on March 7th, Saturn is entering Pisces. So Saturn will be entering a new sign. Saturn spends about 2.5 years in a sign. So it's been in Aquarius for a long time. The first time it kind of dipped into Aquarius was March of 2020. And more than that, we've had 5 years of Saturn in its home sign. So a lot of really like pure Saturn energy going on. So March 6th, new Saturn filter, Saturn in Pisces. Like I said, I'm doing a whole astro circle about that on Thursday the 23rd. So that's new. That's important. And then just a couple days after the new moon, so on March 23rd, Pluto will be entering Aquarius. Pluto entering Aquarius is a big deal. It is also, you know, it's not as big a deal as some people are saying, and that is just because Pluto's only going to be in Aquarius until June, I believe, late May, June. I don't have the dates quite memorized yet, before it dips back into Capricorn. Then it'll go back into Aquarius next January for a little bit. And then it's going to go back into Capricorn. So we don't get like the full throttle Pluto in Aquarius for some time yet. It's not going to be there and like to stay for 20 years until the end of 2024. So we're just kind of getting like the preview, the sneak peek of Pluto in Aquarius. And I would say we're actually getting that right now as well. And so having these two major players, Saturn and Pluto, switch signs in March is more, it's speaking more to this theme of newness. But another thing to keep in mind is that the ingress chart of Pluto moving into Aquarius, so that March 23rd date, is also going to have this lineup in Aries. And so one thing that you can do with astrology is look at the moment a planet changes signs, look at the chart of that moment and see what's going on there to kind of get some information about what that planet's transit through the sign means. And so this initial chart of Pluto moving into Aquarius on March 23rd has that lineup in Aries saying that like initiation is going to be a core theme. Am I going to take that any farther than that right now? No, I'm not. come to my astro circle. I am really hoping to be able to find the time and space to do, to write some articles about Saturn in Pisces and Saturn and Pluto in Aquarius, and maybe some podcasts. But man, my eyes are bigger than my stomach when it comes to the amount of work that I can do on top of client work. So my point is, there was a kind of a long-winded way of saying that I think it's really important to work with this Pisces lunar cycle as a way to kind of like prepare and set the stage for significant intention setting and significant initiatory potential for that Aries new moon. All right. So, you know, you might be listening to this after the new moon happens, and that's fine. That new moon energy is really good for, if not like 48 hours, then the first week of the lunar cycle, so up to the first quarter square. And so, you know, you could do a new moon intention setting ritual. You could just like, without doing ritual, you could just use these 4 weeks, these 28 days, to take stock. Like, where are you at in your life? What do you need to let go of? What do you want to let go of? Can you, you know, petition the powers that be for help in that process, preferably gently, so that you can make space. And then in the second half of the lunar cycle, so after the full moon on March 7th, listen for insights about what wants to come in for you. And at the Pluto in Aquarius astro circle in March will be taking, because it's taking place, that astro circle is taking place on March 21st, which is the day of the new moon, will take, you know, a chunk of time at the beginning to do some intentional ritual intention setting. Okay. So before I get into the dream tending part of this, I just wanted to mention a couple of like really easy, low investment, practical ways to work with Piscean energy, particularly Pisces new moons. The first one that comes to mind is treat your feet. Treat your feet. Feet are the part of the body that are ruled by Pisces, when there's a lot of like dreamy, liminal, foggy energy going on, sometimes you need to just like go back to basics to come down into your body, right? So like that could be Epsom salt baths or Epsom salt soaks, right? Like if you are unfortunate as I am and do not have a bathtub that can support your full-sized body, you can just like draw a bath and just put your feet in, right? Like sit on the edge of the tub, get some Epsom salts, put your feet in there. Good oils for Pisces include rosemary, lavender, rose. You can put a little bit of cedar in there just to like give it a base note, some grounding, with the reminder that, you know, essential oils always need to be diluted in a carrier oil. They should never be ingested, despite what people will tell you. You could make a salt scrub for your bod. So I just do this. I'll get like bulk sea salt. So sea salt is cleansing and clearing, whereas like Epsom salts are about relaxation and they help your muscles. So you could get sea salt and put in like some rosemary, maybe some grapefruit to sweeten it up, and some, and put that in like some olive oil or sweet almond oil. And use that salt scrub on your hands and the back of your neck or whatever your sensitive spots are, just for energetic hygiene purposes while you're taking a shower. With the treat your feet bit, you know, if the Epsom salt baths don't work for you, give yourself a foot massage every night before bed or every morning when you wake up. Like get some kind of lotion or oil that smells really good to you, or unscented is fine too, and rub your feet, right? Treat your feet. But I think that this is a really good time for dream tending. And so with that liminality, right, and because we have, you know, currently Sun and Moon in Pisces, Neptune in Pisces, Venus is leaving Pisces right after the new moon, which is sad. I didn't get enough time with it. And I think Mercury is there too. Oh goodness, I'm not remembering. Oh no, Mercury is not in Pisces until March 2nd. But anyways, Pisces is associated with the dream, with the dream world. And so the first piece of this is going to be, you know, going along with Epsom bath salt soaks or, you know, treating your feet or energetic hygiene, is that sleep hygiene is an important thing for working with dreams. And so, I mean, that word hygiene, very Virgo, what does it even mean? It's going to be different for everyone, but the principle is that you want to create conducive space for yourself to not only dream, but to remember your dreams. And so this has to do with things like clearing the energy around your bed. And the, you know, the easiest way for me to talk about that is in terms of cleaning. That's not everyone's jam. So you just want to make sure that there's less clutter around your bed. If you're so inclined, like make sure that you put fresh sheets on maybe more frequently than you normally would. Fluff your pillows. Make your sleeping environment lovely. So when I talk about dream work, I am talking about dream tending. And there's actually a book called Dream Tending that I really recommend by Steven Eisenstadt. But this is, you know, different than dream analysis, right? And in, you know, the world of dream workers, dream tenders, people who are looking at dreams as being representatives of our psyches, right? Like our psyche, our unconscious, communicates to us through dreams. And it's through this very robust language of symbolism. And so everything happening in your dream is there for a reason, and it's symbolic of something. And so going to like, you know, a dream dictionary might be helpful, but generally speaking, you know, if we even take something like water appearing in a dream, you'll go to a dream dictionary and it'll be like, this represents your unconscious. But like, what's the quality of the water? What does it look like? How do you feel near that water or in that water? Is it choppy? Is it murky? Is it clear? Is it warm? Is it rushing? Is it stagnant? All of those details are really important when it comes to dream work. And so, you know, you're looking to tend your dreams as a way of tending your psyche and as a way of getting to know yourself and as a way of opening up a line of communication between your conscious mind and your psyche and your unconscious mind, your soul, we could say. And so one really cool thing about dreams is that oftentimes the more that you start to tune in, the more that you start to be like, hey, psyche, I'm paying attention, the more you'll start to remember. When I have gone through periods of, you know, actively tending my dreams, it is not uncommon for me to remember like 4 or 5 cycles of dreams a night, which is actually pretty overwhelming if you're really committed to something like dream journaling, because it takes a lot of time. So, you know, obviously for our purposes here, I'm not gonna be able to go into, you know, the full gamut of teachings on dream tending, but just some basic principles. And so another thing that I want to touch on before I get into a couple of specific dream tending techniques is the idea of active imagination. So active imagination is something that comes out of the Jungian school of thought. So Carl Jung, and Jungian psychology and then depth psychology, although it didn't start there, right? It's just kind of taking, you know, ideas that have been around in the world for a very long time and putting them in a psychological framework. But active imagination is a means of kind of assimilating unconscious contents, so things from dreams, waking dreams, fantasies, through some form of self-expression. And the objective is to kind of give a voice to sides of yourself that are not normally heard and to establish a line of communication. All right. So, you know, active imagination is something that I encourage people to use a lot. It's something I use a lot when I'm doing guided visualizations and whatnot. But it's essentially saying that like it's an intensive way of interacting with your inner figures. And those could be, you know, humans that appear in dreams. It could be, if you have a recurring dream of houses, it could be the house. It is not necessarily just like fun and fanciful, you know, like, oh, there was an eagle in my dream, and so I'm gonna commune with eagle by going out to a hillside and looking for eagle. Sometimes active imagination can be very intense. You are encountering facets of yourself on their own terms. And so it always deserves reverence. It always deserves the setting and creating of sacred space in order to do it. And sometimes, you know, if things get curious or scary or you feel like you need support, that's when you take what's happening to, you know, your therapist or come have a dream work session with me or something like that. So something is going on between you and these figures that you engage with in active imagination. And active imagination is a kind of broad tool for dream tending, but also for, you know, working with emotions, right? So I often teach people how to do something called memory mapping, which is where, you know, you can, for example, identify a feeling like anxiety. And so then you like find where the anxiety lives in your body, breathe into it. What's a memory from early life that's associated with that? And then you just let whatever memory comes, come. And then you let yourself kind of replay that memory. Okay. And so then you might find a figure that was, you know, a real human in your life at that time, but now you're going to engage with that human, that energy in this active imagination kind of way. Okay. So, you know, we'll probably clarify this more as I keep talking. So with dreaming, it's helpful to note that like we tend to consider dreams to be unreal and then physical life is real, but dreams have physiological effects. They engage our cardiovascular and respiratory systems. They, are connected with hormonal production, brainwave activity. We can awake from a dream out of breath or anxious or ecstatic or relieved or sweating. And so, in some sense, dreams are real. And they're also real when they give us insight into problem solving or therapeutic insights. Oftentimes, they're so real that it's only when we wake up that we realize they're dreams. And so part of what I've been inviting people to do, this came through in my ritual guidance for my Patreon people this month, is to, set the stage for dreaming by lowering the lights in your home an hour before bed and all that good stuff, but then writing a letter to your psyche before you drop off, right? So, dearest soul, love of my life, please send me a dream that will help me to understand my path moving forward. Love, Amanda. This would be a very potent time for doing something like that, whether it's just one night or multiple nights in a row, and then doing your due diligence by writing down whatever it is you remember in the morning to open up that line of communication. Okay. So when you have a good, juicy dream to work with, I have a couple of suggestions for ways to kind of like get to know the dream on its own terms. And so, first thing is it's really important to approach your dreams with curiosity and with an openness to them revealing what they need to reveal without your prior assumptions about what they might mean. And so a lot of these techniques I'm going to suggest here do have, this element of active imagination in them, right? And so we're trying to allow the images of our dreams to exist as autonomous, spontaneously arising figures, and then notice how those figures affect our emotions, or reveal their own emotions. And then we can turn those emotions into another image that we can work with. So, some basic tips: you want to select a vivid dream. And the first thing you always want to do is write it down in detail. You could also draw it, but usually it's writing it down. And you want to write it down in present tense, so as if it's happening. So, I am walking down the hallway and I'm feeling excited, and the door opens. All right. And then, before you start working with the dream and these techniques, I'm going to tell you, read it over once. So, you're going to write it down, read it over once, and then you have it for later if you want to work with it again. And then, you want to close your eyes and like, let it play out in your mind exactly as it was at least once. Okay, so this is kind of like inviting the dream in. Now, in these suggestions, I'm going to give you a couple tips to keep in mind. Give yourself permission to just make it up. Okay, so if you're like, one of the things you can do with dreams is reanimate them past the point where they ended. And so, for some people, that'll get into that territory of like, oh, I don't know if this is real. Am I just making it up? Just make it up. Just go with whatever comes. Know that it's all meaningful. Every sensation, every image, every memory, or random thought or feeling that arises has importance. Leave your assumptions about what things mean at the door. And then you want to ask some core questions when you're working with dream figures and dream images. So, who is visiting now? What is happening here? And what am I aware of? So not like, what does this dream mean? Or why is this happening? You want to ask the figures in your dream, who is visiting? What's happening here? And then ask yourself, what am I aware of? So I'm aware that I'm feeling uneasy. I'm aware that I want to dance with this figure. Whatever it is, it's all good information. You can even ask questions like, how are you? And listen for the response, right? Like, engage as if you were in a regular everyday conversation, even if you're like, you know, you've isolated a table from your dream. Tables can respond in the dream world. It's fine. Be patient and experiment, right? This can be playful work. And then remember that if, you know, something comes up in a dream that you're not quite sure how to deal with, you can use resources and resourcing, right? So if you feel scared or uncertain, call in a protector animal ally. Or if you like hit, you know, a wall, like literally if you're like walking down a path in your dream and you hit a wall, can you become, you know, a substance that can move through the wall, like air to push through it? Can you pull out a handy dandy saw and like saw open an opening, right? So in the imaginal realms, you can use your imagination to deal with challenges that arise. Okay. So just going over a couple of dream techniques. One would be something I've already alluded to, which is reanimating the dream. And so that would be, you know, you could imagine yourself sitting in a movie theater watching the dream play out on the screen from start to finish. So do that once and then run it through again, but like freeze frame it at vital parts. So a new character comes in or something changes, and then just scrutinize the details. Like from that perspective, what do you notice? Maybe you're really compelled by the red shirt that someone is wearing. Okay, what is that evoking within you? And then maybe that means that you start wearing a red shirt and you just notice how that feels. So that's a way of kind of bringing the dream into waking life. You can also use that technique to run through your dream and then let it play past the point of the known ending and see what happens. Or you can run it through again and change the ending. You can also do that same kind of thing, but reanimating the dream as the dreamer. So you play it forward, but from the perspective of being in the dream. So from the same perspective that you had as the dreamer the first time. Right? And so then you're asking that question of like, what am I aware of? What am I feeling? What am I thinking? And then you can play it forward past the ending. You can change things. You can also reanimate your dream as another figure. Okay, so maybe the dream is I walk into a room and I'm sitting at a table and the bartender brings me a glass of wine. So you could reanimate the dream from the perspective of the bartender, of the glass of wine, of the table. And again, you're just paying attention to like, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What's going on within me? Because again, every element of that dream, every image is essentially a repository of wisdom from your psyche. And this can be really helpful when you have an element of your dream that's really puzzling or troublesome. It can be helpful to like put your body into the same position as those figures. So just remember, like these images are living and they have their own intelligence. So let yourself be surprised. So you can also do things like mapping the dream in your body. So begin with the opening scene of the dream and then just ask the question, if the scene lived in your body, where would it be? And then, or if this, you know, this image from this dream lived in my body, where would it be? And then let the dream or that image drop into that part of your body and just notice how your body responds, whether it grows hotter or colder. Does it feel anger, sadness, pleasure? Let your body inform you about the scene. And so, you know, as you can tell with a lot of these things, they are not geared towards specific answers, although sometimes you will get some. They're not geared towards, like, what does this thing mean? It's about developing a relationship, an ongoing relationship with the images of your psyche. I do tend to take the stance that, like, everything in your dream is a representative of your stuff. Does that mean that's always the case? No, like some people have prophetic dreams. Some people have visitations from, you know, spirits or whatever, people who have died in their past in their dreams. I don't know that that is the norm. I mean, I really don't know, but I do tend to take a very heavily psychological approach to dreams, and that I think that they are usually just parts of you. So, like, you know, your sister will show up in your dream. Is it literally your sister? Probably not. But the thing is that through developing an ongoing relationship with your dreams, you are getting to know the way that they work. And then sometimes you'll be like, I think that really was. Like, I think that really was my sister. Or I think my dad, you know, my dead dad did really visit me. Whereas other times it's just going to be an aspect of your psyche. And so the approaches that I'm teaching are really dealing with, you know, essentially getting to know your own inner world, which is a really cool thing. But again, that makes it really important to follow through. Okay, so it's, you don't want to have like a usury relationship with your inner world. You want to say like, hey, I hear you, I see you, I'm paying attention. And so a really co important component of dream work is to bring the dream into waking life in some way. And that's always going to look different. And so it might be that, like, you take up a regular dream tending practice, and like every morning you spend the first 2 hours of the day journaling your dreams. And so you don't have, you know, time and space to go big. So maybe you just like have a really profound epiphany or awareness. And you take a walk around the block just thinking about that and integrating it and giving gratitude. Or maybe you have a dream figure that comes in that really profoundly touches you. And so you paint it, or you draw it, or you make digital art, or whatever the kids are doing these days. Or maybe you have an animal visit you in a dream and you go, you know, buy a statue, a little stone statue of that animal, and put it on your altar. Bigger dreams or like recurring dreams might need more intensive work in the real world, like honoring them, right? But it can also be those little things. So if you're drinking rose tea in your dream, why don't you just go buy some rose tea and see what you notice while you're drinking it? Okay, so that is all about, that's how relational work works. That's what it means to build a relationship with the within and without. And then, you know, for bigger things, you can look into things like dream incubations, or bigger ritual. You can use dreams to inform ritual. And you can also, like I said at the beginning, ask your dreams a question and see what the answer is. And so coming full circle, you know, with this Pisces lunar cycle and starting that kind of communion and communication and connection with your dream world, dear soul, what is it I need to let go of? Or, dear soul, what seeds do I need to plant in the coming cycle? And so you can get some really magical, albeit sometimes cryptic, answers to these questions. And, you know, I don't know if the psyche is intentionally trying to be cryptic. It's just that it has so much to say, and it uses the language of image and metaphor, which is so much different than linear speech, right? It requires that relational approach. Okay. So hopefully that is helpful. Please feel free to email me any questions that you might have. You can go to aquarianspirals.com and use the contact form. I always love hearing from people, although these days I'm needing a little bit longer than normal to respond. You are welcome to set up a session with me. I start folks with the initial intake. Although, you know, occasionally somebody contacts me who's like, I just have this big dream I need to work through. Can we do a session just for that? And I say, sure, because it's fascinating. But wishing you a really lovely Pisces season. And I guess the last thing I'll say, since it's just pinged into my brain, I didn't intend to talk about it, is just an acknowledgement that, you know, we're headed into the third anniversary of the pandemic. Pisces can be associated with grief, but I think that, you know, one of the most significant significations of Saturn in Pisces, as far as I can tell, and this is my bias, right? Like, I'm a grief worker. But I think that one of the biggest potentials for Saturn in Pisces is going to be creating containers for grief work. And goodness knows that is very necessary. It has been necessary. But, you know, as a culture species, I don't know, as a one of those things, we are dealing with so much every day. We are dealing with collapse. We are dealing with constant bombardment with terribleness. You know, the chemical spill in Ohio is just really, really eating at me, because it's so layered with how fucked up things are. Point being that we can get really stuck in grief, and not like stuck in grief in terms of constantly grieving, stuck in grief in terms of like denying it, repressing it, and trying to move forward without dealing with our emotional responses to what is happening. And, you know, I talk about this all the time, but I think that Saturn in Pisces, again, is just providing necessity slash energy for creating spaces, Saturn, creating containers, Saturn, for dealing with those roiling undercurrents of the deep ocean. There's Pisces. And so, you know, just acknowledging that although I am experiencing this Pisces lunation as being magical and uplifting in a lot of ways, that might not be the case for you. And that, you know, the third anniversary, anniversaries are definitely linked to rehashings of traumatic experiences. And so, you know, in that sense, this Pisces energy could be a helper in terms of like letting some of that stuff go, especially if you can get containers for it. So therapy or ritual or communities who are open to talking about things. It can also be, you know, somewhat anxiety producing, because Pisces, especially Neptune in Pisces, is associated with like existential anxiety, existential despair, that kind of like, what does it all mean? And so if you need to use this Pisces lunation to just like say, universe or my spirit guides or my helpers on the other side, I could really use some support. Do that too. Forget about dream work, and, or, you know, include it too. And then go back to those other practices, treating your feet, making, you know, doubling down on your energetic hygiene. One of the caveats with, not caveats, but one of the things to remember with energetic hygiene is that if you do something like a cleansing salt scrub, so that sea salt scrub, you are, you know, moving energy out and through, your cleansing energy. So then you want to proactively and consciously put energy back so that there's not a vacuum. So that's where the like the grapefruit part of the grapefruit and rosemary essential oil comes in, right? Rosemary is helping with the cleansing, grapefruit is saying, and then we're bringing in the sweet vibrance. Or I'm imagining my field with golden light, or I'm going to bake some cookies and bring like the sweet scent of chocolatey, bready goodness into my home. Okay, you want to fill in the spaces that you clear out proactively. That's the end of that tangent. So thank you for listening. I hope to see you around. And if you like what you hear, please give me a 5-star rating and or share this with your networks. That's really helpful for realsy. Okay. Thanks. Bye. And I know I just said bye, but per usual, those of you who follow me on Instagram know I always end things and I'm like, also, wait, I forgot. I forgot that I also made a Pisces season playlist, which I will link in the show notes. It's on Spotify. I rarely make playlists for other people because music is such a personal thing, but also like I have really good taste in music. So you might not like it, but I think you might. And it's all Pisces season inspired because it's one of the easiest vibes for me to tune into, Venus and Pisces over here. So I made that for you. And while I'm saying that, it's been a while since I said that. The opening and ending song for this podcast is by a band called Daguerreotypes, which is one of my favorite Seattle bands. They have been disbanded for over 10 years. I think the last time they played together was 2010 for my 30th birthday party. But just liking to cite my sources, Daguerreotypes, my dear friend Johnny is the singer and lyric writer, and a bunch of my other friends are in the band. So I don't really know if you can get their music anywhere, but it's really good. And they gave me permission to use it. So there we are. Okay, now for real, I'm going to stop and give you the ending song. Consensus.